Hey, this is Web3 Talks. The rule of this podcast is simple. We only talk with people who have hands-on Web3 building experience. So if you are a hacker, entrepreneur, or investor, you can get inspired by their stories, lessons, and fuck-ups. My name is Mac, and I'm hosting this pod. If you want to stay in touch, go to twitter.com/Web3Talks, click the link in the pinned tweet, and join our Discord community. Let's go. It's been some time. It's the first episode of the year 2023. And today's guest is Oli from SimpleHash. And SimpleHash is a project in the Web3 infra space. What they did was they took 850 million NFTs across 18 chains and they indexed them. So that, you know, when you're building a wallet or portfolio tracker, you can easily get access to these NFTs, see who owns which one, what are the transfers, and so on. And also, if you build like a Web3 game and you have a sword that they get upgraded to a magic sword, you can reflect that in the metadata of the NFT because you can update this information in your game pretty fast. So, Oli, I'm glad to hear you, not see you because we are just on audio here. So could you tell us story behind SimpleHash? What made you start this project?
Totally appreciate it. Great to be here. Thanks for having me on the podcast. The story is essentially my co-founder, Alex Kilker, who I've known since college. We've both been interested in crypto for a long time. And his previous company, he was CTO of another NFT startup, which is called Showtime, which is an NFT gallery product. And while he was there, he built out a lot of the back infrastructure for powering, displaying NFTs, indexing, that kind of thing. And his experience was this was a massive technical challenge and just not something that you necessarily want to do for yourself if you're building another project. And when we joined forces at the end of 2021, we knew we wanted to do something in Web3. We were batting around a number of different ideas. And the idea was essentially to build out this similar kind of infrastructure to be able to collect NFT data across multiple chains, because we also see that NFT activity is growing across chains. And that's how we decided on the focus for SimpleHash.
Yeah, and this is a project that, like, you know, indexing NFTs sounds like, of course, you should be able to do it, but it doesn't sound like such a hard thing to do. But I'm sure it is. So I'm wondering, like, what's the hardest thing about indexing NFTs across many chains?
Yeah, it's one of those things where I think it's relatively easy to get 80% of the way there, but to be really comprehensive is actually quite a hard problem. It's hard for a couple of reasons. One is NFT data compared to other types of blockchain data is actually quite messy and often non-standard, even if it's using a standard, because you have the on-chain data, which represents obviously the current state. Then there's usually some form of metadata, which could be hosted on IPFS. It could be on a random bucket somewhere. It could be anywhere. Is the media, it can be slow to access, it can be a different format, it can be a non-standard size, all those kind of things. And so actually collating that in, it can be quite slow and challenging to actually pull out. Then there's just a proliferation of different standards across many different chains as well. You have 721 and 1155 standards on EVM chains, but there are a bunch of non-standard contracts as well. Solana, that ecosystem is entirely different. And then there are other chain networks as well, where things work a little bit differently. And then if you want to keep everything in state in sync in terms of here's the full transaction history, here's who owns what in real time, here's what the full price is in real time, here's the information about the collection, actually pulling that all together, having a common schema and keeping it all in sync becomes a much larger challenge than originally anticipated.
Yeah, so it's kind of like if you're building, I don't know, like AI-driven tool, you just use an API to like OpenAI API or like Midjourney or whatever. And it takes like 20 lines of code instead of, I don't know, like a million, I guess. So in your case, I guess it's the same. Like people can just build NFT-driven products without caring about this long and tedious backend part of NFT projects. And you've been around for around a year or so, and you already work with Phantom Wallet, which is like number one Solana wallet. You work with Rainbow, which is one of the top ETH wallets. So I'm wondering, like, how have you acquired your first users and how do you do it now?
Yeah, for sure. It's a great question. I think the context is we went through YC at the start of last year, and then I think a lot of their advice in terms of customer acquisition wore off on us, and the whole maxim of do things that don't scale. And early on, it was very much founder-led sales in terms of reaching out to folks that who are in our network, trying to uncover their pain points, their needs, being very attentive to what it is that they want and what we should be building, all the rest of that.
Mm-hmm. And how have you found these people?
Well, I think in the beginning, it was a combination of just folks who are already in my co-founder and I's network and then asking for introductions, but also continuing to build up our presence. I think most of our customers are actually come via word of mouth so far, in terms of developers obviously talk and share the kinds of tools that they're using. And so we've got a lot of inbound recently in terms of just folks who are active in the ecosystem that have heard about what we're putting out.
Yeah, and you've started talking with these users back then, and I guess you had some assumptions about, you know, what do they need, what's the perfect roadmap for the project, and so on. So I'm wondering, like, what kind of assumptions did you have that turned out to be wrong, like something that you learned and was counterintuitive at the start?
Yeah, totally. One of the earliest focuses we had actually was building out a search functionality in terms of like searching for NFTs, that kind of thing. And I think that will probably be addressed in the market at some point. But for us, we found, at least from the teams we were talking to, that wasn't the most pressing need they had. It was much more about the programmatic access to the metadata. And so I think we sort of put that to the side in the beginning.
Mm-hmm. So you support like 18 chains at this point. And I know that the rule of thumb is that the more chains you support, the bigger pain in the ass it is. So I'm wondering, like, what's your way of supporting and integrating new chains? Do you have any process in place or any tools that you use? I know, you know, some time ago I had an interview with Austin from QuickNote, and he said that they have their own like proprietary software that they created to help to integrate new chains faster. So I'm wondering, like, what was your solution for that problem?
Yeah, our architecture is built to be quite modular in that we have a common scheme, at least from the end user experiences, it's a common schema across all chains in terms of querying the data. And we built our architecture to be similar in that fashion as well, in that we, right down to even like the log level, we're ingesting a lot of the same data and adapting it no matter what chain we're working with. Certainly there are differences. I'd say like the largest differences that we have to deal with are mainly between the EVM chains and Solana. But I think we've become faster and more experienced in doing it over the last couple of months. And at this point, we've got it down to a pretty well-refined process. And so for us, adding new chains at this point, it's really driven more by developer demand and what people in the market are telling us in terms of what they want.
Mm-hmm. So like, let's say, for example, that, you know, developers say, okay, we want support for ZK Sync. So how does it look like?
Well, I mean, I think there's a market question, there's a technical implementation question. The market question, certainly, it's a little bit of an art and science, right? What is the current developer activity? What is NFT sales and trading volume on these chains? And those are the kind of signals we look at. But then in the technical side, it's sort of obviously getting, what is the documentation that currently exists? Can we get in touch with the existing developer ecosystem? What existing tooling is in place that would help us do this chain load? And then that's kind of the direction of doing both the historical backfill of the chain, but then also getting up to set up to run well incrementally as well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, makes sense. So the NFT API is something that's like, I think it's being approached by some projects as well. I know that Morales provides some NFT API. I know that Zora works on that. So I'm wondering, like, how do you want to compete with other players in that space when it comes to a project that's like developer-centric product, like, you know, no user, end user sees it in action. So like they see the result, but like not the underlying process. So I'm wondering, like, you know, what's your way of competing with others NFT APIs?
Yeah, totally. I think the way we think about this is there's always going to be a wide variety of providers in the market, and that's great. And competition is healthy. For us, we're taking the view that we're going to go fairly deep into NFT data itself, right? There are providers out there who are sort of a one-stop shop for all blockchain development, things that are broader rather than narrow. And that's great. You know, that suits different projects depending on their use case. But for us, we are aiming to solve, it's the kind of going back to this point of like the 80% versus, you know, the 99.9%. We're trying to be the 99.999% solution for NFTs. And that means handling all of the non-standard edge cases. It means pulling in the widest variety of NFT metadata, correcting it. There's corrupted media, doing conversions so it's better on mobile devices, making sure that the floor prices show up and are consistent across different collections. All of these kinds of things, which you have to be a little bit obsessed about getting all of the different standards and all of the different chains to work in a consistent fashion.
Okay, so you're like super specialized in this field and you kind of cover all the bases.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's just a question of what we're setting out to do this, but it also means we have to decide what we're not going to do, right? Like we're not an option right now if you want to get, for example, ERC-20 balance data, and we're not a minting platform, for example. And it's always going to be a trade-off in terms of what do you focus on.
Mm-hmm. Makes sense. And you said about corrupt media in NFT. So I'm wondering, like, how do you solve it? How do you solve the fact that, you know, sometimes the media is not there?
Yeah, I mean, there's a variety of things that can go wrong. And it varies everything from the original source times out. You have to have a consistent pattern before trying to actually pull it in, or if you go through a proxy service, or the file time might be incorrect. So it render incorrectly on certain devices. So actually the bytecode and then changing the extension or converting SVGs to PNGs because they don't render well on mobile devices. It's all a bunch of little things. And, you know, there are sometimes situations where it's not possible to get the media because someone didn't use a decentralized store and the media really is dead and gone. But those are relevant.
Yeah. There are not so many NFTs on Google Drive anymore.
Well, I mean, you'd be surprised. There's a lot of stuff. But
yeah. So I know that you have a very, talking about intriguing things, you have an intriguing feature, and I think a feature that like super, super important right now, because NFTs have been used as a way to do unsolicited marketing. So there are just like, you know, flyers that you, instead of putting them in your mailbox, they put them in your wallet. So I know that you designed an NFT spam score that helps you filter out these NFTs that might be unwanted. So could you tell a little bit more about it?
Yeah, totally. This was developed in response to, as you say, NFTs, unfortunately, like many other forms of information, being used to spam people or scam them. And what we do is we use a variety of different signals to essentially rate an NFT collection in terms of how spammy we think it is. And we deliver a score that's from 0 to 100, zero thinking we don't think it's spam, meaning we think it's a spam. And we provide this essentially as a tool for the end user to decide, okay, or the developer to decide, what do I want to include? What do I not want to include? A lot of companies are doing a thing where, you know, here's your hidden folder of NFTs, for example. And we use a variety of different signals. So we use a bunch of different spam models. We actually use an LLM API as well to actually look at what is the structure of the NFT and does this look like known spam NFTs. We look at, does the NFT seem like it was delivered in an airdrop? Was this NFT actually being actively traded on known marketplaces? Have there been a lot of burns on this contract, for example? A variety of different things that sort of help us inform, is this likely to be spam or not?
Mm-hmm. And as you worked on this spam score, like, what was the process? Like, how you came up with this idea? And, you know, kind of like, did you do it like together with different users or your developers? Or have you came up with it like inside the company?
I mean, it was originally developed in-house. But certainly, I mean, as with any feature that we have, we take the feedback of our users very, very seriously. So it's not unique to the spam scores, right? Just about everything that we roll out, we strive to get as much feedback and input and requests as well from our customers. But yeah, certainly we've gotten a lot of feedback on spam scores, and we actually offer an endpoint to our customers who use it, who want to be able to report spam or flag something that's not spam, and helps improve the model over time.
Yeah. And I'm wondering, like, in business like yours, like, what are the metrics of success? Like, what do you measure to make sure that you are on the right track when it comes to growth and engagement, of course?
Yeah, for us, it's pretty simple, right? It's revenue and it's number of developers using the platform.
Mm-hmm.
At the end of the day, you need to keep yourself accountable by sort of a certain set of outcomes. And for us, though, we are trying to be a real business. We're trying to build a platform that folks really love. And so those are our guiding star KPIs. But in terms of, I suppose, the other things we look at, I mean, we are constantly talking to our customers, getting feedback, hearing what they like, what they don't like. Of course, looking at developer activity in terms of queries, what endpoints are being used, what chains are being used most, that kind of thing as well. I think it's often too easy to fool yourself into looking at some set of metrics that don't ultimately matter too much, and just go keep ourselves a bit honest.
Just a short break to remind you that if you like this podcast, please don't hesitate to subscribe and give it a 5-star review on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, or whatever platform you use. Thanks a lot. You say a lot about talking with users. So I'm wondering, like, do you have any process in place for that? Like, you know, how do you do it? Like, who does this conversation? Is it like founding team, or do you have any other people doing that? How does it work in your company?
Yeah, we've taken the point of view that everyone on our team should be closely talking to customers every day. Certainly, I do a lot of that in terms of outreach, but we have other folks on our team who are engaged in outreach to developers. We're engaged to other ecosystem partners, but we also talk a lot with our existing customers, and everyone is operating customer support in some sense as well, because I think if you get detached from that, it's hard to be building something that people want without that real world feedback.
Yeah. This customer support comment is interesting because, like, you know, when you start building a product, it's easy to kind of like stop talking with customers and just wait for the info from other team members, which sometimes might be good, but then it's like secondhand experience when it comes to hearing what these people say. And when you hear something firsthand, it's more powerful, I guess.
Yeah, I mean, it, like anything, it's a trade-off, right? I mean, you can't be too far one way or the other. If you know, it's a trap if you're just building and not listening to feedback and you end up building something people don't want. But you also can't be too reactionary in that there are always trade-offs, and it would be nice to be able to deliver everything that anyone in the world could possibly want, but you have to focus and you have to prioritize and best use of resources.
This is an interesting path we can follow. Like, how do you decide, you know, which things you don't do? Because, you know, sometimes, as you said, like, users might want some feature, some new chain or whatever. But like, how do you say, okay, it's not something we want to do anyway?
Yeah, I mean, to some extent, it is somewhat case by case, but I would say the guiding rules we have here is generally we are only going to be dealing with NFT data right now. So, you know, we're not doing what is the price of Bitcoin trading metrics on that. We're focused on the read side of data, right? In terms of we're not going to be deploying smart contracts to help people mint stuff. There are really great providers in the space who will do that sort of thing. So I think while we do get requests like that, we're just like, that's not who we are and what we do right now. But I think there are a lot of other hard edge cases, right? And probably the most common one that comes up is, can you add XYZ chain? And I think there we always have to be evaluating, again, what are the leading metrics around developer activity? Is this a chain that is seeing growth in terms of NFT adoption, in terms of a thriving community? Is this somewhere where it's quite unique and it'll be delivering something new to the ecosystem and therefore we should support it?
Mm-hmm. I guess, you know, and you've seen quite many NFTs because of your job. So I wonder, like, do you have any types or examples of NFTs that you liked personally? You know, just like as Ollie Wilson, not as a, you know, particularly like a co-founder of Simple Hash.
You know, it's funny. I wish I'm not a very good trader. I wish I'd been a better trader in 2021 and 2022 for NFTs. I think probably for me, I still appreciate a lot of maybe some of the OG collections, you know, Bored Ape, Azuki, Doodles, DeGods on Solana, because they've managed to actually sustain the communities throughout the bear market, even though I think a lot of people would have written that off. And with the price action that we've seen, people would have assumed it would just would have all disappeared, and it hasn't. So I think that's something that's been very impressive.
Yeah, I must admit, I was one of, like, although I'm very bullish on NFTs in general, I was also one of the people that were very skeptical about, you know, how these communities can behave in the bear market. For me, like, the most interesting NFTs would be more in the space of utility NFTs. The ones that, like, for example, using NFTs for ticketing, like, I think it's going to be huge, and especially for secondary ticket sales. So looking forward to seeing in action. I'm wondering, do you have any thoughts about utility NFTs from your point of view?
Yeah, I think if we're going to draw more people into the space and have quote-unquote real-world adoption, there has to be some linkage to the real world, I suppose. And I think ticketing is one of these things wherein the existing solution is really broken. Nobody likes Ticketmaster. Nobody likes existing ticket providers, right? It's not a good experience. And for Web3 or crypto to flourish, we need to be able to build experiences that aren't just different, but are actually, or based on speculation, that are actually better than what currently exists. And I think ticketing is a really good opportunity.
Yeah, and the great thing about NFT tickets is that, you know, you can NFT gate different experiences, whether it's like, you know, access to some content or like a Discord channel or whatever. So like it automatically becomes like this wristband that lets you in different spaces after the concert or sports event, which is kind of interesting. So, you know, I'd like to ask you about YC, because you've been in YC in one of the latest batches, as far as I know. And, you know, there's been a lot of discussions about YC in the last few years, because, you know, their batches are bigger, they are more online than they've been before, and so on. So I'm wondering, like, what has been your experience in YC land? Like, because many people who are listening to that are considering applying. So I'm wondering, you know, what could you tell about this experience? How was it in your case? And, you know, what kind of expectations have it fulfilled? And if there were any that weren't fulfilled, could you also tell us that?
We had a uniformly positive experience. And actually, it was kind of fun for us. We joined the Winter 22 batch a little bit late, so we had to get up to speed very quickly. For us, there are a couple of things that don't really change for trying to build something, and that's build something that people want, talk to your users, and get rapid feedback, right? And focus on what matters, and speed and urgency. And those are all the things that YC very much emphasizes, whether you're building an NFT API or whatever other kind of business, really. And I think access to the network that they have, and certainly help with fundraising and all of that, I still think they're the best in the world in what they do.
Mm-hmm. And was it online right now? How does it work?
Yeah, we're mostly online because we were, so about a year ago, it was still the tail end of, I guess it was Omicron and whatever it was. I forget exactly what they're doing now with the new batches, but I think there are more in-person events now.
Mm-hmm. Okay, and you have already got like a certain scale. So I'm wondering, like, what kind of challenges you see on the horizon when it comes to growth and tech?
Yeah, I think there's kind of two answers here. On the growth side, I think it's a similar challenge to any other business, right? In terms of making sure we continue to focus on what matters, building what people want, scaling out the business, continuing to go after customers who are a good fit for us and who we can build meaningful partnerships with. I think also, just as an industry more broadly, it goes back to your point earlier about having real utility, right? I think space does need to move on from things that are purely based in speculation and actually figuring out what are those use cases going to be, because I'm sure they'll be quite different 6 months, 12 months, 24 months than what they have today. On the technical side, I think it's going to be really interesting because the number of, you know, the 850 million NFTs that we have indexed right now, that is obviously increasing all the time. And just as people continue to do more with NFTs and the growth rate increases, keeping up with that, keeping up with the new standards, keeping up with just the sheer volume of everything will be an exciting technical challenge.
Mm-hmm. And because we haven't spoken about that, but like your business is this on this infrastructure side of things. So I'm wondering, like, how do you take care of this infrastructure side? Do you have like your own servers, or like you use some other providers, or like how do you do it? Because I guess like the volume of all the data that comes through your servers must be pretty big.
It is the kind of thing where we actually use a patchwork of different solutions, partly because handling different ecosystems, right? There's different sources for EVM data that are different than Solana, and different integrations that help us get marketplace data, that kind of thing. But I think the thing is, and actually the exciting thing is, while I think we have probably the world's largest NFT index across different chains right now, that data set in comparison to a lot of other data sets in Web2 is actually still relatively small, right? So I think a lot of opportunity to scale, and there's a lot of opportunity for the space to continue to grow and embed itself in many other use cases, such as ticketing, as you mentioned, and ones that aren't just what they're being used for today.
Mm-hmm. And if you were not building Simple Hash, what would you build?
This is funny. I'm a really big skier. I think I'd go be a ski instructor or something like that. Just hang out.
Okay. So I get another question that I always ask. If you had a magic wand and could fix one thing about Web3 and crypto in general, what would you fix?
Yeah, I mean, this is not an original answer, but removing the scams, right? I mean, I think unfortunately we're at a point where after everything that's happened with all of the crypto shadow banks and FTX and everything imploding last year, public trust is probably the lowest, at least while I've been in crypto or been interested in the space. And I think that's really unfortunate, right? And it harms all of the public perception of all the real good and the exciting things that are being built. So that would be what I would remove, would be the scams.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, this is like, you would need a powerful magic wand for that.
Yes, definitely. Very powerful.
So I'm wondering, like, have you seen any projects in this space? They don't need to be NFT related. That you found interesting or mind-blowing, you know, something that was super, super interesting for you?
Yeah, I think the most interesting and probably one of the most technically impressive things that's happened in the past year in crypto was the Ethereum merge, right? I mean, that was a combination of so much effort, many years of meticulous planning, and it was pulled off without a hitch. And I just think that speaks to the testament of the quality of the people in crypto that went off the way it did.
Yeah, it was so surprising that this event was so anticlimactic. Like, I mean, like, it happened so smoothly that I barely noticed it. Like, of course, there are people, you know, talking about the merge everywhere, so it was hard to not notice that something's going to happen. But like, it was so smooth compared to all the noise that happens around other projects in crypto that I was also amazed, like, how they managed to pull it off and, you know, have, like, they are flying an airplane and they are, like, changing an engine during the flight, kind of. So very, very demanding task. So have you had any funny stories in Simple Hash? Because, like, you're, like, a very technical product. I'm wondering, like, did you have any funny stories, anecdotes that happened to you during the time that you've been building?
You know, I wish we had more. I mean, I don't know. I mean, I think for us, we, in some sense, we're an infrastructure provider, so we're a little bit nerdy and boring. I mean, maybe we should invest more levity. I do appreciate a lot of the dark humor on crypto Twitter, especially during the bear market, because I think whatever else is going on, crypto produces the best memes. And I think it's kept all of us maybe a little bit more enlightened with everything that's been going on the last couple of months.
Yeah, that's true. Like, the memes here are top notch. Like, I haven't seen any space that has better memes than crypto. I mean, the level of irony here is like absolutely off the charts. Okay, so, you know, we are getting till the end, but I'm wondering, is there anything that I have not asked you that you would like to talk about regarding Simple Hash? Something that you would like to share?
No, I mean, just, we love talking to people building the space or thinking about building the space. So if you want to learn more, we have our website, which is simplehash.com, or you can reach out to me. I'm ollie@simplehash.com. Mostly we're just excited for anyone who's looking to use NFTs in some way.
Okay. So I guess this is like the best place to reach you, email and website. Do you have any like, you know, Twitter, Discord, Telegram, wherever people should land?
Telegram's the same as, well, I think I'm about, you know, 8 or 9 different chat apps at this point. But my Telegram is also at Ollie Wilson as well. So.
And if people want to, you know, learn more about SimpleHash, should they go to the website or is there any other place?
Yep, that's the best place. Or they can just email us directly or hit us up on Telegram.
Okay. So Ollie, like, thanks a lot for sharing your thoughts and hope to see you soon. By the way, I checked SimpleHash before our conversation and it was so strange because like whenever I have something that is kind of like a simple product from the end user perspective, not from the creator, of course, but like when it's simple, but it just works fast and well, it's so crazy. I mean, like, because like, it's so easy to have like, you know, non-reliable products and, you know, something that's some two guys tinkering in the garage, but you kind of have to use it because there are no alternatives as the space moves fast. And, you know, but the fact that this SimpleHash was so sleek, I was really impressed. So I just wanted to share that.
Thank you. I mean, we're just trying to provide the best experience we can to developers. I mean, there's a long way to go and lots more to build, but that's what we're trying to do.
Okay. So thanks a lot, Ollie. And, you know, see you somewhere on Twitter, I guess, or other internet place.
Really appreciate it.
So this is almost the end, but if you like this episode and don't want to miss the next ones, feel free to subscribe. If you liked it a lot, I'd be personally grateful if you could give us a 5-star review on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, or whatever platform you use. Thanks to these ratings, more people can learn about Web3 Talks, and it's really important to me. That's all for today. Thanks for listening, and see you next time.